Welcome to the Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Are you a small business owner who thinks they pay too much in taxes? We can help. Give us a call or book a meeting by clicking the link in the show notes to book a free financial consultation so you can have peace of mind about your financial future. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits as a key to unlock your workforce. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again, Podcast Friday. Here we are, Al, best co-host in the business. What do you have to say this week, Al?
Well, thank you, Robin. Well, before we dive into meeting our guest today, which I'm very excited about, I did want to give a quick shout out to an event that we attended this week, the Walrus Gala downtown. It was very exciting. For people who don't know about the Walrus, I would certainly recommend looking them up, and they are a great source of information that is tough to get these days. So I'll leave it at that, but we had a great time. I think you'd agree. So a big shout out to them for inviting us down, and we had a great time and met some great people.
Great event. And Jennifer Hollett, who is my relationship down at the Walrus, just knocked it out of the park. So kudos to her for running such a great event. We look forward to next year. Well, Al said, we are excited because Bill Cherniak is joining us today. Bill's an emergency physician with training in family medicine and global public health. He is a co-founder and board chair of Bridge to Health Medical and Dental Canada and USA, and the founder and CEO of Rocket Doctor Inc., a Medicaid-focused Shopify for clinicians that integrates a unique support system, advanced AI-fueled software, and wireless medical devices to enhance care. Bill has had research published in the New England Journal of Medicine, The Lancet, Academic Medicine, PLOS One, you'll have to explain what that one is for me, and given numerous speeches in Europe and North America on digital health as well as global public health and development. Bill completed his medical school at the University of Calgary and residency at the University of Toronto. He completed a cancer fellowship at the U.S. Federal Government Center for Global Health and the National Cancer Institute, National Institutes of Health, as well as a master in public health at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health with a concentration in health crisis and humanitarian assistance, while a Sumner Scholar with a full scholarship. He is an adjunct professor with Northwestern University, associate faculty at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, and an assistant professor at the University of Toronto's Department of Family and Community Medicine, Division of Emergency Medicine. And Bill, even you are looking at me like, wow, that's a lot. That's a lot in the bio. Yeah. I was joking around with Al before we started pre-recording. I said, I'm going to read this, and then I'm going to think, boy, I haven't accomplished that much in life, but listen, welcome to the show. You're clearly accomplished, and we appreciate you being here.
Well, thanks. It sounds a bit funny reading it all out loud like that at once, but anyways, thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, Bill, obviously you're accomplished, and one of the questions that I will ask entrepreneurs, because I'm always curious about where this all started for them. For me, it started with a paper route, right? I was an entrepreneur, and then I was cutting lawns in the local neighborhood. Can you just take us back in time? Is this wanting to be a physician? Where did that come from? And then how did you end up creating the company that you're working with now in Rocket Doctor?
Yeah, I mean, I've done a bunch of odd jobs over the course of my life, going back to when I was like 15, working as a salesman at Sport Check and reffing dodgeball and flag football and ski instructing and holding garage sales and stuff. But have always sort of been interested in trying a bunch of different things. And actually, it's funny because I originally was going to, I had all these grand designs to go be a chef. And so that was my plan, not a doctor. But then flipped when I got into, you know, the last couple of years of high school, as I started to become more interested in health, particularly in undergrad. And Rocket Doctor came actually through my first formal startup, which was, as you mentioned, Bridge to Health. It's a nonprofit. And that was about 12 years ago, getting that started, working with partners in Sub-Saharan East Africa mostly. And the idea behind Bridge to Health is building comprehensive care for rural underserved communities, partnering this kind of coalition of the willing with government, civil society, academia, But then working in these communities on, let's say, a mountainside in rural Uganda, where they might lack running water and electricity, let alone doctors, we started to come across high-tech diagnostics and devices as a means of increasing access to care. And then got a cloud-based teleradiology program set up that caught the attention of the New York Times. So that got some press, which pushed me more into the tech sector. And then as an emergency physician working across rural hospitals in Ontario, Alberta, as well as urban centers in Toronto, just the same thing, folks coming into the hospital with outpatient primary care issues, and thought, could we combine these high-tech diagnostics we're using overseas with virtual care to increase access, keep people out of the hospital that didn't need to be there? And so that was fall 2019. And then the pandemic hit in the spring of 2020, and we just sort of dove in head first, and here we are today.
That's really cool that you've done that. And as you're talking about that, I'm thinking about if I'm going back in time when I'm just out of high school, maybe into university, and most of the conversations that I had with people were focused on the community that we're in. Where does that come from for you to want to serve these underserved areas in remote locations you talked about outside of Canada? Where does that come from? Was that something you grew up with, or is that something that developed along the way, that your desire to help people that maybe don't have access to that?
Well, in the sort of flowing epitaph that you read, or the intro bio, it talks about conferences and speaking. And so before Rocket Doctor, I did a lot more, and before the pandemic, was doing a lot more discussion and research around global health. And I talk about in these sessions the kind of cliched transformative experience, which, you know, happened to me when I was like 21 in first year of med school. There was a partnered program with University of Calgary and a physician in Tanzania who would accept a few medical students to come overseas. And so went overseas thinking it was going to be this exciting thing in East Africa. And then, yeah, went through a bunch of different public hospitals, dispensaries, NGOs, and kind of got this eye-opening experience that, oh, the world doesn't work the same way it does in Canada and high-income countries. Most of the world, in fact, looks a lot like what we saw in East Africa and low- and middle-income countries, and incredibly difficult access to care for folks. Some very, you know, unfortunate examples of real challenges for patients on the ground there. And so that kind of opened my eyes to that whole thing. And then in my last year of med school, I went back to work with a Ugandan-led nonprofit in the southwest of the country and saw how a Ugandan physician was really building a grassroots initiative to take care of folks largely who are HIV positive at kind of the height of the epidemic in Uganda. And so thought that was really great to see that locally led initiative that also integrated social determinants of health, so poverty as well as education, together with healthcare, and thought this is a really neat model. I hadn't done my public health degree at the time, but of course that's, you know, public health. And so then thought, well, I think what we need to do is really work with folks like this that are building great organizations from the ground up and see if we can help empower them to do their work with support from partners externally. So that's where the idea of Bridge to Health came from, was really not being the ones that run the local projects, but partnering with folks from those communities and helping them build initiatives. And it just sort of all made sense to me as I went along the path, I guess. And maybe that's an entrepreneurial thing, is wasn't a predefined plan I had or a 10-year plan. I had these experiences that stood out in my mind as something that needed work to try to improve. And so just jumped into it.
Bill, you said in your last answer, you went to Africa, going to be exciting, opened your eyes, realize there's a lot of differences between here and Canada. Can you maybe talk about maybe some of the big takeaways and enlighten us for those of us who have never had to experience that? Can you maybe talk about some key takeaways that you had from that experience and maybe what specifically that's led to with what's going on right now in your life?
Yeah, I mean, there's good research that shows that physicians, Canadian or US doctors or otherwise, that go and do these global health experiences internationally or domestically, actually end up seeing what healthcare is like outside of kind of the ivory tower medicine that we're trained in. So at the, you know, beautiful academic downtown hospitals where everything kind of runs clockwork and folks have access to the top level subspecialists, versus you get into one of these, you know, rural communities, particularly if you're in a low income country, and you see, well, you've got one primary care clinician. Sometimes it's not even a doctor. It might be like a physician assistant or an NP level equivalent who's by themselves running the entire healthcare system for 80,000 people. You think, well, how is this person doing this kind of work? And then you see, you know, the lack of access to infrastructure. So maybe you ran out of medicines because you only get them once a month and it's last week of the month. So now, whoops, we got nothing left to treat you. Or there's no, in some cases, no anesthetic if you need a surgery. So you got to do it awake, which I unfortunately had to see once in Tanzania. And so you just sort of see how things could be dramatically different. And you grow to appreciate some of the stuff that we have, but also gives you an idea of how you can improve the system that you're working in, I guess, if that makes sense.
It does. And I'm going to assume you've already alluded to this a little bit. A lot of the care that I'm assuming that you did over there was virtual care, use of technology. Can you talk a little bit about that? And maybe, you know, in Canada, the idea of virtual care. Listen, we've been over the years, you know, you need your primary physician, you go into the doctor's office, you see them. Obviously, with the pandemic, things have changed. The model is maybe changing a little bit, and virtual care is becoming more mainstream. So can you talk a little bit about maybe some misconceptions about virtual care and how it can, well, maybe improve everyone's medical experience?
Yeah, totally. So the work overseas was largely, we set up these mobile hospitals in rural communities. But what we found is because there's such a shortage of healthcare professionals, what would be effective for long-term sustainability was building the ability for those local clinicians that are off by themselves to upload images to a cloud-based server where they could then get feedback, mentorship, support from physicians around the world. So you could be in the most rural, isolated village on a mountainside in Uganda, but talk to the world's leading specialist in pediatric pneumonia, you know, immediately. So that was, again, the impetus for thinking about Rocket Doctor and could we bring this tech to Canada because of all these instances where I was seeing all these patients coming to the hospital because can't get a hold of my family doctor or I don't have a family doctor, which is now 6 million Canadians. And so where do I go? Well, the emergency department. And that's awful for a patient because you got to sit there in an ER for hours. It's burning out clinicians because ultimately you're trying to manage outpatient primary care when trained to do acute care medicine. And the folks that are having the acute situations have to wait longer. So all of that combined to say, okay, what if we basically leverage the same principles here, but we empowered patients in the community within Canada to get access to a certified physician from wherever they are at whatever time they need it. But it's not just an urgent care or a walk-in clinic model where you get an antibiotic for a sore throat or something, but you get a doctor. And so that doctor can, you know, figure out if you've got an outpatient primary care issue and order blood work, order imaging, book a follow-up appointment, get you to a specialist. Or, you know, maybe it's the middle of the night, you have a family doctor, they're for no fault of their own, their office is closed, and you just are scared. You don't know, is this an emergency? But you can't get a hold of anyone. So you get a doctor and that doctor can even just reassure you and say, yeah, this is okay. You can stay at home. You can book your family doc, follow up in a week or two. That's fine. So we empower the system to try to function more efficiently, ultimately. And then for people who do not have a family doctor, the neat thing is the world is changing for work patterns, right? The average person used to get a job and work for 30 to 40 years. And that was what you did. And then you retire. That's the same thing for family doctors that we all have in our head, the country family doc that does this and whatever. But doctors are no different from the rest of the workforce, and physicians don't want to do that forever. And so people want to have a very clinical practice and do a bunch of different things and be in a more supportive environment. So we create that through this kind of digital ecosystem where hundreds of physicians can collaborate on a cloud-based infrastructure, share securely health records, and help to take care of patients on an ongoing basis so that you don't have to do all this work by yourself and be burnt out on an island on your own. You get to work with your peers and with the support system. So that's what we're trying to do at Rocket Doctor, basically.
Bill, I don't know if I ever told you during our first call my experience with the virtual care through a doctor. And it was phenomenal. It was a great experience. And it was one of my first. And I thought, oh, this is valuable. For me personally, it doesn't replace my personal physician, right? It was just a circumstance where I needed help quickly. A day before I'm heading to Europe, I go to close the front door. I'm going for a walk. My wife, I get a sting on my finger and I see, oh, it's a wasp. Okay. You know, that stung. And my wife says, oh, do you want to go in and take something or ice it? No, you know, tough guy. It's okay. And it stung and I didn't really think much about it. And I went to bed that night. Fingers started swelling up overnight in the morning. So much pressure on that finger. I felt it was turning blue. So I gone to a virtual healthcare providers, talked to a doctor, and within 15 minutes, had a chat going back and forth, explained I was hopping on a plane that night, got it all rectified, prescriptions digitally sent to the pharmacy, and I got on that plane and away we go. So such a great experience. But you know what I've always wondered, and I wanted to ask you, because we talked to so many business owners, CEOs, entrepreneurs on this podcast, and a lot of them are in tech, a lot of them in law. I understand those types of companies. I'm just wondering, what has been your experience running a healthcare company compared to, you know, another type of firm? I imagine that it'd be a little bit different.
I think about Rocket Doctor as a tech company. So that's how I would think about us, a tech company that works in the healthcare space. We see ourselves as a sort of Shopify for providers, but then also have a marketplace model to help connect docs to patients. But specific differences for us being in the healthcare sector, number one, the first thing that came to my head is privacy and data security. So thinking about the importance for everything we do in Canada, we don't have federal legislation around health information privacy. We have provincial regulations. In America, they have HIPAA. HIPAA is the most restrictive. So we build based on HIPAA, is how we think about everything. And so that changes so much about what you can and can't do in many different areas. So we always think about that, I think, is the primary challenge. And then, of course, as you think about services that we can quote unquote market to people, we take the position at Rocket Doctor that it's more important to us that the services that are being offered are clinically top notch rather than simply drive a buck. It's not just about what gets the most clicks or eyeballs or whatever. We're not going to do it if we don't feel that it represents the highest quality of clinical care, or it's evidence-based, or it's going to help people. So that's an approach that we took early on, basically.
And Bill, I've seen different numbers in terms of percentages of what can be addressed through virtual care. In your estimation, with what you found, what's the percentage of people saying for the average this and that? Yeah, I can see virtual. This is the point, though, however, where I need to go see someone in person.
Yeah, so I'm an emergency doctor. I'm also trained in family medicine, but there are some circumstances where you need me in the emergency department and you should not be going onto a virtual care ecosystem. And those, thankfully, are not particularly common in the grand scheme of healthcare. And what I joke with people is you go to an outpatient primary care office and we're doing the same things in that office like Hippocrates was doing 2000 years ago. We're pushing on your belly. We're listening to your chest with this thing. Like they used to use one of those like cups that the kids use to listen on a door or whatever. Like that's what it's that this, you know. So we're doing all this stuff. But meanwhile, we're in the 21st century and we have blood tests and we have CAT scans and MRIs and CTs and X-rays and all these other great investigations that we can do. And so from the perspective that I take and that we've seen in the literature, probably close to 50, 60%, if not more, of healthcare in an outpatient setting can be done virtually. And when I say outpatient setting, that also includes probably, we know, 30 to 40% of emergency department visits are folks that have low acuity issues that could be in an outpatient setting. They don't have a primary care doctor. They can't get an outpatient setting. So they go to the ER. So all that huge proportion can be done virtually if the doctor is empowered to order those investigations. And maybe they're able to get a blood pressure or heart rate or do a video visit where they can have a look at you. Because so much of what we do in clinical medicine is we look at you and then we write, appears well, appears unwell. We can tell how hard you're working to breathe, all this other stuff. So if we combine all these factors together, we actually get a really high proportion of folks that can be managed virtually effectively.
So that leads me to another question. What is the pushback against more of what you just described? Because my perception is, and maybe I'm wrong, that there's not a huge quick uptake on virtual care, that there's still a lot of resistance, and whether that's systematic or whether that's just from the public. Can you comment on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember the name of the doctor now, but I was having a conversation with someone literally yesterday about how it's always difficult to make change in healthcare. And I used to say at the start of Rocket Doctor, it took a global pandemic to pull medicine kicking and screaming out of the dark ages into the 21st century. But then there's this great story about, I can't remember this guy's name, the physician who first started to talk about microbes and how you need to wash your hands. And then the story is that he went around telling people, you got to wash your hands. There are these little germs that cause infection. And the doctors had him committed to a sanatorium. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's kind of the idea here, is that it's very hard to make change in medicine. And so the reason for that is we're a trade-based profession, right? Like we do apprenticeships, internships, residencies. We learn from our attendings. We train on certain evidence-based guidelines now. And so if you've not been trained in competency-based medical education on virtual care than in your mind, A, you don't feel confident doing it because you haven't seen your supervisor, you haven't done your 10,000 hours of virtual care, you're not an expert in it, so you don't want to do it because you're not confident. And what we're seeing, though, now is medical students and residents that came up during the pandemic for 4 years, almost all they did was virtual care. And now education is shifting to train you on virtual care. So I think we saw this huge push in a virtual care at the height of the pandemic when you literally couldn't see a patient otherwise. We've got a massive clawback now as people say, well, now maybe we can go back to in-person. But ultimately, no patient wants to go drive and pay for parking and sit in a waiting room if they didn't have to. And most doctors would prefer to have that variability where maybe part of your practice is in-person and part is virtual. So now we have to come back and settle it into a dynamic that slowly starts to now carefully grow over time, but exponentially greater than what it was before. Like pre-pandemic, less than 1% of all healthcare was done virtually. And now we're up to still 35% or so. So night and day compared to where we started.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up the pandemic. And, you know, more and more in conversations, people will say, you know, something actually good came out of the pandemic. And to your point, the percentage that you just talked about, but there's so many things that actually looking back are probably positive changes that never would have happened until, like you said, they were forced upon us. Anything that you wish you had known that you know now in hindsight that you wish you'd known when you'd started out? Ignorance is bliss. A lot of times people say, gee, if I'd known that before, I never even would have gone down that path. But
I think there's two key things. One is that from startup perspective, the saying is everything always takes twice as long and costs three times as much. So any plan, always keep that in mind. That's one. Two is that in healthcare, at least, I came in maybe a little naively thinking if I have something that clearly improves clinical outcomes, everyone's going to want it immediately. And that is just not the case because there's a complex web of how all these different systems are connected and how different groups operate. And there's a lot of relationship building and trust and showing something works at a, you know, proof of concept versus at scale. And are we going to put energy and time into this and reframing a system of care around a new intervention? So those two things, I think, are the key sort of things I wish I kind of known at the start, just to help to sort of plan and be prepared, I guess. But, you know, you learn as you go.
Your first point about everything taking twice as long, Bill, that one resonates with me because in 2018, I approached the partners with a plan to take our business to the next level. And I said, by 2019, 2020, we will be there. And of course, it's really not until this year. And of course, we had a bit of a something happen during those years that set us back a little bit. But I finally find we're there now. And, you know, when I look at my own business and I have chats with entrepreneurs like yourself, I'm really excited about the future. In spite of what I see going on in the world, there's a lot of challenges. I'm always the one who's going to find the lemonade and not the lemons. Where do you see Rocket Doctor going and what are you most excited about?
Yeah, I mean, we today are really focused on building new and better technology that's incorporating these new large language models and artificial intelligence to streamline the practice of medicine, improve the tech system we've been building, more standardized quality of care. So I think that's really exciting because this just didn't exist a year ago, even a year and a half ago. It just wasn't ready to do this kind of work that we're seeing today. And there's a huge explosion of innovation in that space. So that's really cool. And then more, I think, recognition that virtual care to folks that are in the space, it sounds really, I think, probably elementary to people, but it's really important that the general public understands, both patients and physicians, that it's safe, it's effective, if done correctly in the right way with the right tools. And so seeing that become deeply more ingrained in our healthcare system in ways that helps to increase access to care and try to offset in some way the current crisis that we're in with accessing primary care across the country.
Well, I'm excited to see what you do because my wife and I have both used virtual care now and we've become fans of it because, like you said, if I don't have to go and park and wait in a waiting room and it can get resolved in a safe way, that I'm a big fan of that. I don't know how many episodes you have heard, and we don't always ask Al's signature question, but I'd love to throw it at you if you're up. To me, you've already answered it, but maybe there's something else you want to add to it. So Al, take it away.
We always get surprised, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So here we go. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any of those proverbial trees that you might be planting?
Yeah, hopefully the trees that we're planting end up growing and producing some shade over the years and continue. I think we are trying to go on the kind of tidal wave that started with the pandemic of technologic revolution in the way that we practice healthcare. And there are very deep life science initiatives and pharmaceutical developments and medical techniques and all these other things that are deep in the space of healthcare. There are more health system, sort of public health interventions. And so I think I actually look at digital health as a public health intervention in many ways. Right now, we've seen 350,000 patients on the platform. There's no reason why it can't be hundreds of millions of people or billions as you get to folks around the world who can start to get access. And it may not be us. It may be other groups that come up that are regionally specific or that do very specific things. But hopefully we're part of that momentum, I suppose, amongst a bunch of other folks doing good work in this space.
Perfect. And I got to say, I'm always very much admire people in your field. It's such an important field. I know it's something I could never do because of, you know, what I perceive to be the qualities that you have to have. And the medical field, while it fascinates me, I just don't think I could ever do it. So kudos to you. And thanks for jumping on today. This has been great.
Yeah, really appreciate it. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. And thank you for sharing your journey with Rocket Doctor, as well as everything else that you've done. What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they have questions about yourself or what you're doing at Rocket Doctor?
Yeah, pleasure. And thanks for those kind words. And yeah, I think folks can find me on LinkedIn, just William Cherniak, available there, and pretty neurotic on my inbox. So I'm always checking.
Well, before I wrap it up, I do want to give a shout out to our good friend, our mutual friend, Lack Gill over at Pillway for making an introduction. Again, just reinforcing great people know other great people. So I appreciate that, Lack. Well, that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. Success leaves clues, my friends. We'll see you next time.